Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Baby Moon or Bust by Ava Hunter, narrated by CJ Bloom and Aiden Snow. Baby Moon, noun, informal. 1. A relaxing or romantic vacation taken by parents-to-be shortly before the birth of their baby. On the eve of the third trimester, two strangers are stuck together among the whispering palm trees of Mexico for a torturous, week-long baby moon. A critical period of time after childbirth, where the new parents run on madness and caffeine while establishing a bond with their newborn. A baby moon is regarded as a special time for the mother and father to fall in love with their baby and each other. 1. Chapter 1. Get lit, get loose, get laid. Tessie Truelove lives to cross out each and every item outlined in her carefully planned agenda. 3 priority tasks a day. But this specific request doesn't make the cut, as much as she'd like it to. Tess shuts her planner on tomorrow's lengthy to-do list. Exhaling a determined sigh, she swivels on her bar stool to survey the dank Tennessee bar the locals call the Bear's Ear. She can appreciate a dive. Hell, she was raised in a dive. Dives can give lessons in bold clashing patterns and thinking outside the box. Automatically, her mind goes to prettying up the surly space. She can't help it. It's ingrained. The walls could use a coat of paint. She'd nix the antlers, small furry beasts of burden, get rid of the wooden beer cooler, add black horseshoe booths for smooth lines, keep the loud music, funky country with a beat. Locals and tourists alike face off over beers and booths, a bachelor party, the men pounding shots with masculine exuberance roars in the corner. A singer on the jukebox croons about whiskey and the way his ex-wife slugged him with 2 rounds of lead back in 53. Tessie squints at the plaque behind the bar, proclaiming Bear's Ear a must-visit destination. Drink. She needs a drink, and maybe a tetanus shot. Pushing herself up on her stool, she lifts a hand to the bartender. Excuse me, do you have a wine list? He scowls, pulling drafts with reckless abandon.
Beer or liquor, Blondie. That's all we're serving.
She holds his hard stare. The name is Tess. And yours? He sighs. She presses her palms together in a prayer pose. I really need a glass of wine. Another sigh.
Tequila, okay?
Inhaling a breath, ready to ramble, ready to work her best no-nonsense magic, she leans across the bar and locks eyes with the man. Listen. I didn't work a 17-hour day and get lost on these dusty back roads to shoot piss-poured tequila shots in a dive bar with nudie calendars on the wall and an eardrum-shattering jukebox. No offense. After the day I've had, I deserve a glass of wine. The bartender's jaw twitches. Please. She lifts her chin, narrows her gaze. He stops, wipes his rag along the bar, tilts his head, then a sigh of defeat.
Red or white?
She smiles. White, please. With ice. A curl of his lip.
Don't push it.
He Hulk smashes a hand into the ancient fridge and fumbles around until he retrieves a dusty bottle. The wine is a translucent white with peach undertones. She doesn't need to pull her Pantone book out of her bag to know which color she'd assigned to the drink. Swatch 9180. She lives by Pantone colors. They are blissful order, neat squares that tell a person exactly what to expect. No surprises, no chaos. Tess jumps as the bartender slams the bottle of wine onto the bar top in front of her with a hard stamp of disapproval. Thank. Tess is mid-sentence when he hurries off to surlier patrons. At least he left her the bottle. You, she mutters, eschewing etiquette and propping both elbows on the lacquered surface in front of her before dropping her face to her hands. Even the bartender hates her, and why wouldn't he? She's terrible. Terrible Tess. She scowls. Fucking Atlas. He's the one who saddled her with the awful nickname after the whole carpeted wall debacle years ago. Usually, she's content donning the Terrible Tess moniker because it means she gets the job done for her clients. And rather than her interns, she takes Atlas's wrath. But tonight, that means she's in the boonies celebrating, alone, per usual. Rallying optimism, Tess closes her eyes and inhales deep, doing her best to focus on her big accomplishment of the day. The newly opened Gray and Grace Hotel in Nashville is the highlight of her portfolio. A popular country singer opened a bar on Broadway and selected her as head designer. A 2-year-long project finally finished. If this doesn't clinch her promotion at Atlas Rose Interiors, an internationally renowned celebrity interior design firm, nothing will. After the big reveal and the client walkthrough, Tessie offered to buy her junior design staff a round of shots. They looked at her like she was off her rocker.
"Get a life, lady,"
one of the interns had grunted before the group of them trudged off. She opened her mouth to snap, "I have a life." Then, just as abruptly, she shut it. Sven, the intern, was right. She didn't have a life. She had a job and an angry boss, and her mood boards and Pantone chips. She has her records and a bubble bath and a glass of wine when she finds the time. Who could blame them? Who'd want to hang out with her after she'd barked orders all day? She barely wants to hang out with herself. It was that heart-twisting, face-slapping realization that had her spiraling, that made her grab her rental car keys and punch the gas and drive. Just drive away from the city and onto dusty country back roads. In search of a reprieve, a second to be the so very not uptight, not so terrible Tess she'd come to be. And she found a bar where she doesn't have to be herself, a city where no one knows her, a night she doesn't have to hide behind her professional facade, where no one will call her terrible. Maybe her cousin Ash's words of wisdom, "Get lit, get loose, get laid," are worth considering. Because tomorrow, she goes back to the rat race that is Los Angeles. Tomorrow, she'll be Terrible Tess once more. She examines her gold-tipped nails and drains the remainder of her wine, refills the glass with a hearty pour. She loves her job. But for one night, she wants to forget. Make mistakes. Have fun. Tessie never expected to put her entire life into a job. But here she is, 32 years old, and it's exactly what she's done. It's what she's good at, sleeping alone, working 16-hour days, keeping acquaintances, not friends, spending all her time in showrooms, lugging heavy containers of tile and fabric samples, scrambling to appease her clients, tearing out the most beautiful parts of ancient houses to make way for depressing gray floors and the same boring open concept floor plans. Kissing Atlas's ass and refilling his Xanax prescription for a chance to make it as a senior designer. She chugs her wine. God help her. If the hotel she single-handedly designed doesn't get her the penny pain account, she'll fling herself into the Cumberland River. She'll float her way back to L.A., her perfect makeup ruined, a gorgeous corpse, but a dead, jobless, bloated corpse nonetheless. Still, her job might not love her back, but it doesn't break her heart. Work is her life, because Tessie can count on one hand the number of people who have left her, and if she folded all those fingers down, she'd make a fist, and fists fucking hurt. Her own money, her own life. Indestructible, except tonight. Tonight, maybe she could work in a smidge of destruction. Excitement. That familiar electricity snaps in her soul. The old Tessie surfacing. The gutsy girl who waited tables for 2 years to make ends meet after college, who hunted old records and medicine bottles at antique stores when she started staging model homes. Not Terrible Tess, who screams at the interns when they forget to fluff the pillows before a client visit. Tessie rolls her eyes at the ape-like noises coming from the bachelor party, then glances down at herself. She's not dive enough. She shrugs off her blazer, leaving herself in a black silk tank top and the ripped jeans she changed into before heading out for the night. A quick flick of her wrist, and she lets down her golden hair, placing the French hairpin beside her wine glass. Freedom. She surveys the drink in her hand. And alcohol. If Ash were here, she'd give Tessie a quick slap on the ass, and she'd repeat the marching orders she gave her before she boarded her flight at LAX. Get lit, get loose, get laid. Tess chews her full bottom lip. The thought is tempting. She hasn't been laid in, what, a millennium? At the very least, since open floor concepts were a thing. But before she can talk herself out of it, a boisterous laugh sideswipes her thoughts. Tipping forward, Tessie peers down the long bar top. 6 seats down, a man with sandy blonde hair hoots like a hyena. And beside him, her eyes light on the beast of a man sitting stiffly on a bar stool. His rugged face is pained, and he glowers into space like he craves an escape hatch, looking just as uncomfortable as she feels. But aside from that, he's hot. Damn hot. She narrows her gaze, zeroes in, appreciates. Her brain short circuits as she drinks him in. He's tall, even hunched over the bar top, his body built and broad. He wears a black buffalo plaid flannel shirt, black lager boots, and faded jeans. His black hair is roguishly messy, longer in the front and trim in the back. The sleeves of his flannel are shoved up to the elbows, exposing massive, corded forearms dusted with dark hair and violently colorful tattoos. As he shakes his head at his friend, he taps along to the beat of the country song. Tessie goes soft all over. Her mom would like him. She scowls at the intrusive thought. And then she laughs, the memory of the dive bar where her mother worked coming to her. She would sit in that grimy booth, her legs dangling over the edge while she did her homework. Her mother cleaned tables and poured beer, singing along to the jukebox about cowboys and faraway places. She brought home a record player so they could listen to their own cowboys on vinyl. Late at night, they'd sit beside the record player, and her mom would pull out album after album. She knew them all. George Jones, Waylon Jennings, Merle Haggard, Hank Williams. Old school cowboys. This man, though, he's not a cowboy. She gives him a thorough once-over. That beard, close-cropped, trimmed neat. A very mountain man, gruff, rugged. She bets he's the type of man who works with his hands, who has calloused fingertips but a soft touch, and kisses like a dream, a fantasy. Lifting her glass to her lips, she drains her wine. She could go for a fantasy. What does his voice sound like? A rumble of thunder? Sandpaper? She shivers at the thought. The music, the wine, the sight of the mountain man have Tessie loosening up, relaxing, ready for fun, wanting to dance. Gyrate like a fool on her bar stool to the hard pump of hillbilly rock pulsing through the bar. Everything inside her is bright and buzzy, a slosh of emotions. She doesn't want to play it safe just for one night. A curve on her lip, she considers the jukebox with appreciation. She could do it. She could dance, become a feral dance floor woman. No one knows her here. What's the worst that could happen? She slugs her wine. Get lit. She smiles as she kicks off her red-soled pumps. Get loose.
Chapter 2 Solomon Wilder's dead wife is telling him to get laid. Clear as day, Serena's voice resonates in his mind. After 7 years, he may not remember every pretty angle of her face or the deep cobalt color of her irises, but her steady voice has never left him. Always pushing when he needs a good kick in the ass, urging him to move, even when he doesn't want to. "You're scaring the girls away, Saul." A low drawl sounds in his ear. "You got that frown on your face, man." He grunts as Howler claps a hand on his shoulder. His best friend angles closer, waggling lascivious brows. "Loosen up." Twisting the wedding ring on his scarred knuckle, Solomon says, "We're supposed to be doing research." He lifts an amber bottle to his lips, drains it. "Looking at girls doesn't count as research." Howler groans loud enough to be heard over the music. Why are you like this? I finally get you out of the house and you got me flying solo here. Solomon smears a hand down his face. His friend's got some goddamn nerve asking him to leave his cabin and his dog and his mountain. Taking him into an 8-hour flight to Nashville when he hasn't left his small town of Chinook, Alaska in 15 years. Reconnaissance, Howler called it. For their busted, broken-down bar, Howler's Roost. Housed in an old silo, the pair opened it when they were in their early 20s. The bar looked dive from the outside, but inside it was unlike any other establishment in their little town of Chinook. Upscale food and drink for locals. Both men wanted to flex their creative muscles their way. Howler made craft cocktails. Solomon created locally sourced pub food. And they flourished. Until Serena died. Originally, they'd intended it as a hangout for locals. But once Howler got behind the bar and experimented with cocktails, the tourists started pouring in. Called it the best-kept secret in Alaska. Then, 6 months ago, a famous country singer from Nashville put Howler's Roost on the map. He was stranded after a concert, and when he'd returned home, he declared to Food & Wine magazine that the bar had the best damn cocktail he'd ever tasted. The attention they've received since has created nothing but chaos. It's made Howler's Roost a destination people fight to get to. Has them hopping planes from Anchorage just to try the signature cocktail, the red-headed stepchild. Has Howler stockpiling product so he doesn't run out. After a blizzard damaged the roof last year, his best friend jumped at the chance to finally give Howler's Roost a much-needed renovation, which is where this Nashville trip comes in. Scouting bars is inspiration for their own remodel. Bear's Ear Bar is a side-of-the-road pit stop, known for its micro-brews and burgers. Sure, Solomon has been out of the restaurant business for a while, but letting his bar crash and burn isn't an option. Even if that's why the bar fell into disrepair in the first place. Because he wasn't there. Story of his goddamn life. Howler lets out a tormented sigh, bouncing on the stool. You're killing me, dude! I get you off the mountain for the first time in years, and all you do is glower. Solomon crosses his arms. I glower in Chinook, too. Don't I know it? Howler waves at the plate of egg rolls between them. What do you think of the food? Great. Ain't yours. He circles a finger, signaling for two more shots of whiskey. You're doing me a favor being here. We can write this off as a business expense, a cranky ex-chef who needs to have a damn good time. Pushing off the counter, he tips back and surveys the room. How about her? Without turning his head, Solomon says, No. Her? Howler? Listen, I know your flirting skills are rusty. Solomon snatches up his whiskey and brings it to his lips. Dead and buried. This is an excursion, a celebration, your dick's last resort. Lowering his sunny voice, Howler leans in, serious now. Dude, you've atoned long enough. Yeah, he has. He spent the first few years figuring out who he was without her. Now what used to be love is duty, guilt, obligation. A hard-scrabble stubbornness to put Serena first in death, because he didn't in life. Serena would understand, Howler says. He grinds his molars and traces the wood grain of the bar top. He didn't come here for a quick lay. He's here to do research, to help his best friend get their bar back together, and then it's back to Chinook. How about Goldilocks? With a grunt, Solomon slams his whiskey down and glares at his friend, ready to tell him to shut the fuck up. That they've been here all night, that they've got an early day tomorrow. But the wolfish smile on Howler's face makes him spin on his stool. There, in the middle of the bar, is a lone girl who's made the floor her personal dance club. He can't help but stare. Dancing along to the croon of George Strait, she has no rhythm. She's clapping off the beat, but still she's shaking her hips, swinging her long blonde hair and laughing like a gorgeous, dancing wild thing. Damn beautiful. His mouth goes dry. It feels like he just struck gold. The girl looks like it, too. Tossing his head back, Howler cackles and rubs his hands together. She's a hoot! Don't laugh, Solomon orders and gives his friend a glare. She's having fun. Let her. The girl's in tune with the music, swaying with carefree abandon. stem glass in her hand, wine sloshing over the rim and onto the floor, oblivious to the raised brows directed at her. She's not tall, but those legs and those fucking eyes, big, brown, and lined with a fringe of long, dark lashes. She's barefoot, uncaring about the dusty planks beneath her, the spilled beer, the crushed peanuts. Her black tank top dips, exposing the curve of her breasts. Her ripped jeans are practically painted on, showcasing her ass perfectly. She's tan, probably a tourist, but a goddamn gorgeous one. She's magnetic, drawing his gaze and holding it captive. He hasn't stared at a woman like this since Serena. His wife's face is a blur, but this girl's isn't. There's something about her, a fun, flirty, carefree pull that has him aching to know her. Women. Interaction. Aside from his mother and sisters, it's been 7 long years. Serena's voice whispers.
It's time, Solomon. Move your butt, you bearded fool.
But before he can stand, a pretty boy from the bachelor party in the corner saunters toward the girl. Solomon tracks him like a shark. He knows that look, popped collar, wolfish sneer, on the prowl. He's scared off enough losers sniffing around his sisters to know this kid's only interested in taking advantage of her. Then, to his friend, the bachelor boy makes an obscene gesture to the girl's backside. Without touching her, he traces her figure with his palms, pretends to grip her hips, and then thrusts his crotch in her direction. Solomon sucks in a sharp breath, his blood boiling. His fingers curl around his whiskey glass and his knuckles turn white.
Chill, man, Howler groans.
He slips off his stool. Burying his face in his hands, Howler spins on his stool to face the bar. If the fists fly, he's got plausible deniability. Solomon draws himself up to full height and cocks a brow at the boy. All that's needed. A look that says one more step and he'll rip his fucking head off. Gulping hard, the boy tucks tail and retreats to his bachelor party. Oblivious to her retreating suitor, the girl spies Solomon before he can back away, her attention halting him where he stands. High cheekbones, full lips, wide-set brown eyes that sparkle like dewy earth. He takes a breath in hopes of slowing the freight train rattle of his heart.
Hi,
she says, the words devoid of any accent. She hops up on the balls of her feet, her toenails sparkly pink against bronze skin. She grasps his forearm, her voice hopeful.
You come to dance, Mountain Man?
I don't dance, he says, the words coming out gruffer than he means. Behind him, Howler lets out an exhausted sigh, followed by,
Dude!
Fuck, that was surly as hell. Her pretty face creases in disappointment, those once sparkling eyes now dim.
Oh.
He groans inwardly and scrapes a hand down his beard. What the fuck is his problem? She wants a jukebox and a two-step, and he sure as shit should be the man to give it to her. You want a drink? He asks, rallying, praying he can keep her in his orbit a little longer. It's unnatural, his voice, his offer. She watches him from under those dark lashes, her chin dipped low.
Yes, please.
Her tone turns husky, flirtatious. Christ. He fixates on her lips, pink as a glazed donut, plump. With the girl following after him, Solomon moves to the bar, ignoring how tight the crotch of his pants feels.
Wine, he asks over his shoulder.
What are you drinking?
Whiskey.
Then same.
The bartender wipes the lacquered wood surface with a rag and says,
Hey, boss, what you need?
The girl glowers.
Oh, sure, he says hello to you.
2 Blantons, he says. Neat. As they wait for the whiskey, Solomon rests his hand on the counter so he can nab the tab before she can. A harsh suck of air. Solomon sees it the second realization hits her face. Her good time flatlined. Her eyes widen, then narrow as her gaze lights on his wedding band.
Are you married?
Fuck. No. It's all he says, all he can say. She cranes her neck to look at Howler on his other side. In response, he raises his whiskey.
Scout's honor.
Come on, Solomon suggests, wanting to explain. You want some air? Let's go out back. After a second of hesitation and a scrutinizing once over, she nods.
Okay.
She arches a brow.
But I have mace.
I appreciate that. He fights the urge to smile, liking her sass. Whiskey in hand, he holds out an arm, gesturing for her to go first. His heartbeat a steady thump in his ears as she strides to her stool, gathers her purse, and slips on her heels, instantly gaining 5 inches. Howler gives a thumbs up and he scowls in return. They step out onto the unlit back porch and descend the stairs. Fingers brushing close, breaths held, they wander into a forest of tall evergreens. The girl shivers and shrugs her blazer on to protect herself from the biting March wind. As they move deeper into the trees, the harsh rush of traffic is overtaken by the chirp of crickets. The Bear's Ear Bar may be on the outskirts of Nashville, but it's still too city for Solomon's liking.
So? She hedges, her brows drawn and a small frown playing on her lips. You're really not married? Because if you are, I'm not looking to be that girl. At all.
The need to be honest fills him. Because here in this unfamiliar bar with this strange girl, he feels like he can be himself. It feels like a new beginning. No, I'm not. She's been gone a long time. He dips his chin, twirls the gold band around his finger. It's never felt like the right time to take it off. She's quiet for a moment, considering his admission, gauging whether he's an asshole who'd lie about a dead wife.
I get that. Moving on is hard. Her soft, sad tone tells him she's lost someone too.
Where are you from? He asks, searching for a way to fill the silence. The second the words leave his lips, he curses himself, cliché chit-chat that has him wincing. Fuck. Howler's right. He's rusty as hell.
No.
She puts a hand up, keeps her attention on the stream sparkling in the moonlight.
Let's make a deal. No specifics.
When he cocks a brow, she elaborates.
Tonight I'm not me and you're not you.
He nods, appreciating her offer, liking that he can pretend to be someone else, a man who didn't lose his wife 7 years ago, who hasn't been celibate for just as long. They'll keep it light, even though 100 personal questions race through his mind. What's her name? What does she do? Why is she out here? How'd she get to be so damn beautiful? He nods, sips his whiskey. Sounds good to me. Her smile makes his knees weak. Christ, Howler was right. He needs to get out more. A smile shouldn't send him to the grave. She props herself up against a tree and picks at the bark. She takes a long swig from her whiskey, easily breathing through the sting. Then she tilts her head back, flutters those gorgeous lashes, and gasps. What is it? He asks, following her line of sight.
The stars. She scans the sky. I can't see the stars where I'm from. Not like this.
It's what he thought. She's from a big city. No light pollution, Solomon explains, lifting his drink to his lips. I know a better view. She lifts a brow, curious, but she remains silent. My hometown is one of the best places in the world for stargazing.
Really?
She asks, turning her head to watch him, her hair swaying, sending a waft of her scent his way. Yeah. He moves closer to her. She smells like she's been dipped in sunlight and vanilla. One personal question, but keep it vague and slightly uninteresting. He can't help it. Why are you here tonight? She shifts her stance to face him, her pretty face open and vulnerable in the darkness. With that move, the strangeness between them dissipates, leaving only the comfortable quiet of two people who've known each other forever in its wake. She releases a breath and focuses on something just over his shoulder.
Is running away an acceptable answer?
Could be. He shrugs and takes another sip of whiskey.
I work too much, she says softly. I don't have a life.
She looks away like she's embarrassed by the admission, then back to the sky.
Or love. I don't have stars. My mom would always say, find your stars, but I don't have any. I never did.
The sadness in her voice cracks open his chest. You sound lonesome.
I'm always lonesome,
she breathes, turning her attention to him again. Her eyes flash, water, as if to say, save me, take me. And he does. He can't help it. Solomon steps closer, cleaves her in his arms, and presses his mouth to hers. He wants the scent of her on his skin, in his beard. She whimpers.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?